When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Collected Edition Comic Book Podcast, where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Paul Matthew Carr, and with me, as always, Brian Reese.
Hey, that's me. Hey, Paul, what's happening?
Oh, not much. Just, sweltering in the heat.
Yes. Happy autumn to you.
Yes. Happy autumn. I guess. Is it autumn already?
No. Well, it's meteorological autumn, and I dare you to say meteorological five times in a row.
I will
but,
not.
But technically it's meteorological autumn, but there's that. But then the calendar suggests we've still got 3 weeks of summer.
Yeah. Well, let's get on with it. Today on the program, we'll be talking about Aztec, the Ultimate Man, written by, I have no idea. It's, your guess is as good as mine. Who wrote this? this will be an interesting conversation.
Yes.
But before that, Brian, let's talk about the thing we've been waiting for the most. I mean, something that we've been waiting for a long time. And that is, of course, the Batgirl movie, which should be released any day now.
By all accounts, it's awesome.
Well, even if it's not, I mean, okay, so before we get into this, most people who listen to this will probably know that HBO has merged with Discovery, or Discovery bought them outright, the Discovery Channel.
It's the full takeover hasn't happened yet, I don't think, but
yes, and the new CEO, David Zaslav.
You're good with the pronunciation there, because we're going to have a couple pronunciation issues coming up as well. But carry on.
He's the fabulous creative genius who brought us such wonderful shows as Honey Boo Boo, has now taken over creative control of HBO, basically, which of course is a distributor for DC and DC Comics. And there was this Batgirl movie, which was a $90 million Batgirl movie, which was done. It was in post-production. They were doing some final edits and it was good to go. And it's just trashed now, just throwing it away, locking it in a vault, not releasing it.
However, we will still be getting the Ezra Miller starring Flash movie.
Yeah, that's a conversation all unto itself. Anyway, it just seems odd, don't you? And this isn't comic book related. Well, sort of is. There's a Scooby-Doo movie as well. Scoob Holiday Hunt in the same boat, where it was done. It was ready to be released and it was going to be released on Halloween. And that's just gone now, too. No one will see it. It's all for tax.
I mean, you think we could at least get the Snyder cut of both of these films?
Maybe we will. But I don't know. That just seems odd to me. I mean,
it's weird, isn't it?
I mean, how much are you saving?
Not gonna go.
I was gonna say they're by all accounts, what people are reporting is it's not because of the quality, although regardless of some people on Twitter and YouTube, it's not about the quality of the movie. It's about they're cutting their losses and trying to get a write-off in taxes. And they're reorganizing their structure where they're going to do theatrical releases and not HBO Max releases.
Branding. It's all about the branding.
Right. But even so, it's done. How much are you saving in taxes that you couldn't get in, subscribers? Throw it in a movie theater. See what you get.
Or throw it up on the platform.
Right, that you already have.
I mean, how much more is that going to cost? Well, obviously, streaming costs money. You've got the data farms and, the server farms and things like that that I know exist, but I don't understand all of the intricacies of these things. But, just put it up on the platform. If it's good, people will be because apparently part of it is there's not enough action.
Did you see the new Batman movie?
That's like
2.5 hours of I just watching people in the rain be sad.
Yeah. No, I'm never going to get those 2.5 hours of my life back. But, maybe I'd like to give an hour and a half of my life to see a Batgirl movie that, for whom the director and the creators are all people that I'm interested in.
Not to mention the fact, I mean, Leslie Grace, great actress,
Right.
gonna be playing Barbara Gordon. But there's also J.K. Simmons as Commissioner Gordon, her dad.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons.
Yes, and just all around buff guy, apparently. And Brendan Fraser as Firefly, the bad guy.
And you'd think any film with J.K. Simmons, they'd at least be insured.
That's
Well,
right. Dum 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 dum. Just and then and apparently Michael Keaton was supposed to have a cameo or minor role in it as well
right.
as Batman pre Ezra Miller's debacle.
I mean, it's just look, everything I've heard about this film just it sounded interesting to me.
Yeah. And again, even if it's not very good, why not let
They
people
made
see
the
it?
Justice League movie, so
Exactly.
clearly they don't have quality control going there.
You're talking about the Justice League, right?
Yeah, yes. So I don't know.
Yeah, it just
And it's
seems.
weird, so you have a list. I think you compiled a list of shows that are getting. So the bigger issue with this is that they're just canceling shows willy-nilly,
I mean, there's a lot
or
that are not
leaving good
DC.
shows in limbo.
Yeah, there's a lot of shows that are not DC related. So I was trying to keep it to comic books because, that's our
Right.
topic. But there's a lot of like kid shows. They're just decimating all the kid shows on HBO Max, and animation just seems to be out the window as well in general. In
Although
general.
Harley Quinn will survive.
Harley Quinn will survive, and Peacemaker. Those are the two that they have announced. Definitely will get second. I'm surprised about Harley Quinn, not because of its quality, because I love the Harley Quinn show.
But it's filthy.
It is filthy, and it's got
Wonderful.
and it has women in it as leads, but it has wonderful acting. I really like the Harley Quinn animated show. I thought for sure that was going to be one of the first that they cut, but apparently it's going on.
I think it's we don't see the streaming numbers, but I think it's probably a top streamer for the network. Because Harley Quinn is a popular character even outside of comics. Who knows? I mean, by the rumor, the last rumor I heard, and maybe you've heard something differently in the interim, but Doom Patrol may actually survive.
Yeah, it's possible. So the ones that are on the fence right now are Doom Patrol, which I need to see more Doom Patrol. That's become one of my favorite shows. Titans is on the fence right now. I didn't even know this was a thing. Arkham, a Batman spinoff.
Right.
I
And
guess
there's
it's.
the Penguin spinoff.
Yeah, and that one again is sort of, they're saying, yes, maybe, no, I don't know. I mean, the cost for the fat suit alone is going to be astronomical. So those are the ones that are in question. Definitely canceled was one that I thought was going to be really interesting, which was Strange Adventures. It was
Right.
going to be an anthology
Kevin
show,
Smith.
Kevin Smith. I'm not a huge Kevin Smith fan, but he does interesting things and Strange Adventure, and he loves comic books. You got to give him that.
Yes.
So Strange Adventures as an anthology show, I thought would have been really interesting.
Now, but the Green Lantern is still green lit.
Is it?
I don't know. I mean, I assume that since Discovery is taking over, that all of these shows will just turn into. So they're going to use the HBO and HBO Max platform, the adult platform, so that they could do more adult-oriented reality shows. So I'm sure they're trying to find a way to fit DC characters into scripted reality TV shows with more boobs. I don't know, and butts.
Boobs and butts. Well, to
Yeah.
be fair, that is Harley Quinn. There's lots of boobs and butts, male and
Right.
female. Yeah, I don't know what's I just it would be easy just to say anything that's woke related got canceled. But that's not true. It's
Yeah.
all kind of it's across the board. Young
Yeah.
Justice was canceled. Not a show that I particularly watched a lot of, but popular
Yeah.
with the folks. Yeah, I don't get what their plan is. HBO is known for and revered for its scripted television,
Right.
its dramas, and its, what is it, prestige television shows.
Whether
By
they're good or not, is, for every Sopranos or what have you have other shows that don't hit.
But you know, they still have Succession and House of the Dragon now.
But you know, Sunday nights are on HBO. It's like to quote NBC, it's must see TV, right? I mean, that's where some of the, you know, I mean, AMC and FX could argue that they may have even better premiere shows at this point, but
Apple and Amazon are trying really, really hard. But it'll be interesting to see where HBO goes with this. If you think about it, HBO hasn't known what to do with streaming from the get-go.
right.
I mean, they had HBO Now, HBO Go, and HBO Max. Like, we don't know what we're doing.
I mean,
So.
and HBO Max has been kind of great because we're getting all of the like I just go to the Cartoon Network portion of it, and
Yeah.
it's great. I mean, we get Space Ghost Coast to Coast. I can watch
Absolutely.
the entirety of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, and there's very little in life that makes me happier than Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
So, you know, but is that going to go away because it's not a reality show?
And then there's on the opposite end of that is the Turner classic
Turner
movies,
Classic, right.
which is fantastic. So you can go highbrow and lowbrow in the same evening.
You can.
Not to say that Adult Swim is lowbrow, but it can be.
Right.
Yeah.
Wonderfully so sometimes, though.
Yeah. I am currently making my way through Samurai Jack from the beginning and just going, this was a great show. Ooh, it got quiet over all of a sudden.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Samurai Jack?
I haven't seen Samurai Jack.
Silly man.
So we just the silence was I don't have an opinion.
Okay. Well, it's great and you should watch it. But anyway, I got nothing more other than you got a movie, it's made. Let's just see it. If nothing else, it's going to make money now since people are, you've got a captive audience now. People saying, I wasn't interested before, but now I am. I want to see it.
Oh, and even if it's like people hate watch, I mean, the end result, of course, is there, the incel trolls will be all over it, but
Well,
they would
they
be.
already
They
are.
would be
They're
anyway. So, it's like
That was
then the time.
happening before all of this
Yeah.
anyway. Screw those people. I just want to see stuff, even if it's bad. Even this seemed interesting.
Right.
Even if that's all it was, if it was an hour and a half, 2 hours of wow, that was an interesting effort. That's okay. I don't have to.
I've sat through longer for less.
Yeah, Batman. Batman was a beautifully made, well acted 2.5 hours of nothing. Oh, wait. Well, the comments coming in. I'll field those. Apparently, people love that movie, The New Batman. I don't get it. And speaking of things that people seem to love and I don't get, let's take a break and come back and talk about Aztec the Ultimate Man.
Let us.
All right, back in a sec.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, a new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue, in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as
Martian Manhunter,
Batman,
Dr. Fate,
Black Canary,
Fire,
Ice,
Maxwell Lord,
Oberon,
Captain Marvel,
Rocket Red,
Captain Atom,
Mr. Miracle,
Guy Gardner,
Booster Gold,
Blue Beetle,
Nort, and many, many more. Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
And we're back. Brian, this week, you have the ultimate intro to the ultimate comic.
Yeah, I sure do.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Comic books are a funny thing. And comic book writers are even funnier. Some writers spend an entire career churning out functional by-the-number comics, never transcendent, but never bad enough to prevent them from a long career penning fill-ins or getting a plum gig scripting a mid-tier title, keeping the IP active while awaiting cancellation or an infusion of new talent. Other writers are more creative and talented. They have big ideas and are brilliant in the conceptual aspect of the process. They may have astonishing ideas and can create wildly interesting characters, but can't do plot or dialogue to save their lives. They can skate on this because the promise is always stronger than the execution. And then there are writers whose vision perfectly matches their skills. These are the writers we make Pantheon. The weight of their work is measured in breathless terms. They challenge the reader and the conventions of the medium. The dialogue sparkles and their plots are labyrinth. The character creation and development leave fans wanting more. We herald these writers and breathlessly place them alongside great writers in the literature stratosphere. They are, in some ways, the saviors of the medium. And once in a while, these writers, these great writers, make a turd. The idea of nascent superstars Grant Morrison and Mark Millar, collaborating on a new superhero series for DC must have had execs and sales managers drooling in their shot glasses. This should have been one of DC's greatest moments, a shiny new superhero for a new generation, with sales and evergreen trades generating acclaim for decades to come. What we got was Aztec the Ultimate Man. Oh dear. Aztec the Ultimate Man debuted in 1996, written by Morrison and Millar, with incomprehensible art by N. Stephen Harris. It lasted 10 issues, which may have been 9 issues too long. Apparently, Aztec, also known as Uno, also known as Kurt Falconer, was sent to the City of Vanity by the mysterious Q Foundation to prepare for a battle of the ages with the Shadow God for the fate of all humanity. He spends the first half of the series fighting D-list villains and establishing himself as the city's superhero du jour. He makes some connections with the human population and embeds himself with a hospital as a doctor, an alter ego he stole from a dead guy. Batman, Superman, and Green Lantern show up in cameos, and he gets to make friends with them. The Joker does something that isn't quite clear, but again, Batman. The Lizard King enters the plot and gives Aztec an emotional motivation. The Q Foundation dithers about in shadowy panels. And in the best part of the series, Lex Luthor arrives and reveals a longer game that is actually interesting. The Luthor plot pays off as Aztec is inducted into the JLA, which conveniently Morrison was writing at the time. And that's about it. We never see the Shadow God, and who the hell is Lawrence Rodman? Not everything in life is golden or satisfying. Apparently, Morrison and Millar have enjoyed a modicum of success in their future endeavors, despite having a very public falling out. I wish them both the best. So, obviously, I recommended this.
Did you though?
I suggest this as our next reading topic. Paul, do you have feelings? Because I do.
Okay, I think your feelings are going to be stronger than mine, but my ultimate big takeaway from this is confusion. And I kept asking myself as I was reading this, am I missing something? Because no, but this comic has a reputation as being one of these great gems of the 90s.
Yeah, it's weird, and that's part of why I recommended it, was there are people who point to this as when comics were great.
Yeah, when comics were great, and, you know, what a lost opportunity that Aztec didn't continue. And again, am I missing something? Because overall, the big, you know, the great grand message I can give you is it's fine, you know? It's a comic book that tries to be something but just falls flat most of the time. I mean, we'll get into the details in a moment, but, you know, one of the things you have to ask yourself, or have to tell yourself, is if everyone in the comic has to repeatedly tell you how cool the costume isn't cool.
Oh, and the costume's terrible.
Oh, my God, yes. And I'm trying to put this in context. So overall, and again, we'll get into the details, but this is trying to be very meta. It's trying to deconstruct heroes, that sort of thing. And it's then that's like the bread and butter of what Morrison and Millar do. Mm-hmm. Millar.
I'm just going to pronounce it different ways each time I say his name.
So again, I'm trying to put this in context. This is the 90s, and it seems very clumsy to me, you know.
We should also mention that at the same time, Graham Morrison was writing The Invisibles.
Right. And he had already done his run on Animal Man. So he's done the deconstruction of comics thing. So that's that's the thing. I was trying to put it in context. It's like, because is it just, does it just seem, you know, quaint and outdated because there's been 20 to 25 years of people doing this?
Right.
Much better. But then you say, yeah, Grant Morrison is writing The Invisibles. He's already done Animal Man. He's already done Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol, right.
And plus things like She-Hulk have been out, which is already deconstructing comics. Spoiler, by the way, for next episode.
In the middle of a great JLA run.
Right. It seems that, you know, to me, towards the back end, it gets better in the back end, to me, my opinion. The last few issues, I think, start hitting its stride. But it seems to be hitting JLA's stride, as if Grant Morrison was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to, this other title is way more promising, so I'm just going to do that.
Right.
And maybe you get this. It's very interesting to try to, you know, I've read both of these writers.
Yes.
They're trying to pick out what's Morrison and what's Miller.
Yeah, and I think that was the most fun I had in the comic was, oh, this is a Morrison thing.
You know? Well, he talks about Burroughs' cut-up technique. And I'm like, yeah, that's so Morrison.
Verses and, yeah, that whole bit, which doesn't make any sense. And even at the end of the issue that is involved with that, you know, Batman's just like, oh, that's just Joker being Joker. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Don't try to find meaning. He could have very easily said, that's just Morrison being Morrison. Don't try to figure it out. He just took some acid and meditated for 10 minutes. So anyway, yeah. Okay. Let's get into some of the details because it's maybe this confusion will reveal itself in our discussion. Right.
And I would have to say, I mean, bless both of their hearts for being prescient and creating Q, a mysterious shadow group that doesn't seem to like actually have a clue.
And I guess everyone in Aztec society was white with blonde hair.
Well, that's the other. I mean, boy, this comic just really tiptoes dangerously along the appropriation line. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I have some cool imagery I want to use, but let's not dig too deep into it, shall we?
Yeah. I think the first thing off the bat, the art has to be addressed.
Yes. I was very interested. Art is
one of the major problems in this, and there are other problems, but at the end of the day, the really, really bad art.
Yeah. Like, it's sloppy. To me,
there are panels where apparently important things are happening that I had to go back and relook at these panels. I was like, I have no idea.
Right.
I have no idea what's happened in these panels. And some of them don't make sense.
You know, I was
from panel to panel.
I was thinking that. I'm so glad you said that because I've been reading comics for a long time and I think I'm fairly comics literate, but the pacing is off and the scene transitions are just jarring. And then there's just what people are saying and what's happening on the panel are just completely different
things.
Yes.
And there's a scene in the Green Lantern issue where when Green Lantern shows up that it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. There's this whole, like, they're talking and then there's this voice that looks like it's coming from one of the characters and then suddenly they're colored in green and then suddenly Aztec is in a car, like in a green bubble, and there's Green Lantern finally. And you're like, nothing in this transition made any sense. There was no logic to it.
Yeah, and there was no lead
up. Comics, and it's entertainment. I understand not every artist is going to be J.H. Williams, you know. But
you have to do an establishing shot. You have to be able to say, this is what's happening. You know, every time you see a sitcom, they'll start with the house. Like, that's the establishing shot. The next scene is going to be in the house, and that's what we're going to see. Comics do that as well. You'll have an establishing panel, and then you go into the scene. Or when you're going to do a big shocking reveal like that, make it comprehensible. I'm so glad. I thought maybe it was me. Because I was like...
No, and it's like I was talking about writers, you know, artists are the same. You have... Like, we've seen our share of passable artists. Right. We've seen a ton of passable artists, you know, whose job is to just show up and don't wow anybody. Just follow the narrative, represent the action or what have you. I don't know anything else about N. Stephen Harrison.
He's done some other work. He did Batman and he did some Birds of Prey, I think. I know he did a Captain America one shot or miniseries. So I don't think he's done a lot.
Yeah, but I can forgive a bad comic. Like, right, he was busy, there was a deadline, something was going on in his life, he had to like half-ass an issue. But he didn't just half-ass 10 issues. It's like he was illustrating a different comic book. And it was muddy. Colors are muddy.
Right. Even the speech bubbles, the balloons, are sometimes they're facing in such a way that you're like, is that person saying this? Who's saying this exactly? There's one that's just sort of like, it goes off panel. Someone is talking off panel? Who is that?
Right. There's a point where Batman's talking about heat snap or cold snap or cold stroke or heat stroke.
Yes.
Getting the names wrong.
Yeah.
Did you catch? Batman got their name wrong.
Yeah. At one point, I think they call him Heat Wave, which, different guy. And, okay, they're attempting to make jokes throughout this whole thing.
Right.
But they seem so forced. The humor just doesn't land at all, at least for me.
Right. No, there are a couple bits, like the part where Aztec and Green Lantern first meet each other and, you know, there's the joke about, all right, so we got the team up or the, you know, the fight.
Right.
The way that was fine, except it's been done.
Exactly. And again, yeah. This is where I was trying to like putting this in context. Is this early enough for that joke that it's new because it's old hat now?
Right.
But no, they were making that joke for, you know, for years before this. Anyway, yeah, they're making up new supervillains and they all have ridiculous names like Blood Type.
And all of them are, oh my God, the design on all of these, it just screams 90s. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Rob Liefeld must have been looking at these going, this is awesome.
No, I think Rob Liefeld was looking at him going, buddy, but he's really toned that down a little bit.
And I think it was like Blood Type. He had two catchphrases, right? And I had to write them down because, you know, his first catchphrase was, what's your blood type?
And I get that that's the joke. That's the parody that they're trying to get across. Yeah. But it's clumsy.
Right. And then this next one was, you're Kentucky Fried.
I might have just passed over that one.
And maybe I'm biased because we all know that Grant Morrison is, if not my very favorite writer, certainly one of them. So I'm giving him a pass here, but I'm just reading this stuff going, oh, that's Millar. That's not Grant Morrison.
Yeah, absolutely. Full, full acknowledgement. Morrison is in my pantheon of like top five greatest comic book writers and Mark Millar is not. So just leave it at that. But I understand to just talk about Mark Miller for a second. And again, I'm going to use different pronunciations.
I'm switching all the time because there's the running gag about everybody pronouncing his right name wrong. And it's like, okay, yeah. I'm just going to keep doing it then.
I think, although I don't like his writing, that's Miller. I don't like his writing, but I do get that he has interesting ideas.
He's an event guy.
Right. He's an idea guy.
Mm-hmm.
What if Superman landed in Russia? That's a great idea. Let's give it to a good writer.
Right.
And Red Sun is fine. Yeah, but overall, he has really good ideas that would have been done better by other people.
Yeah.
And have been done better by other people in different ways.
Authority.
Anything that's let's not get into that. Let's talk about this comic. Yeah. And Morrison, was he distracted? Because he was doing Invisibles and JLA, which are legitimately really good things.
Mm-hmm.
Was he just distracted? Because it seems to me that the first half of this run, the first half of these 10 issues are very Miller heavy. Yeah. Yeah. The end gets very surreal. And And that seems more Morrison.
Right. I think some of the, and again, who could tell for certain, but I think some of the character creations really are Morrison-esque, though. I mean, Piper and synth.
Right.
You know, the cricket robots.
Well, that's when it gets really surreal towards the end.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, I guess, I mean, if we just want to, like, and also I think the town, Vanity, that seems very Morrison-esque.
In a way, but it's also described in such a way that it's like, oh, seems very pedestrian.
Yeah, but then they had that whole, like, the back matter and everything where they're, like, you know, trying to go into, like, the, who was the guy's name? I wrote it down. The guy who founded Vanity. There's that whole newspaper.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And it's all, like, occult. It's all, like, the founding of the town is based on all of these occult things. So reading that, I was like, that's, you know, that sounds like a Morrison concept, you know, a living city built on like occult principles.
Yeah, that is very Morrison-esque. But then in practice, the day-to-day we see of Vanity, it's just...
it's Gotham.
You know, yeah, it's just Gotham.
Right. And it is, you know, I mean... We've talked about this before, but I always have, you know, I think DC does cities better than Marvel in some ways.
Well,
I mean,
Marvel does New York.
Nobody does New York like Marvel, but everything else is just kind of like, eh. And so we've talked about this, like in Starman, you know, we got Opal City, we've got all these other great, you know, cities and whatever. And I feel like they were trying to make Vanity.
Yeah. First of all, it's in Oregon, which, you know. Okay, not a hot spot of crime in Oregon, but but you're right. DC does do cities really, really well.
And so it's like Vanity, it really felt like they were trying to build Vanity up as like one of these great cities in the DC universe. And it feels like they just abandoned that pretty quickly.
There's a lot of ideas that are brought up in this comic that are abandoned really quickly. For instance, let's talk about Uno, Aztec, Falconer. First of all, right. He comes in, he steals somebody's identity, which is a doctor. Now, I understand you could like take someone's identity maybe as an engineer or a postman, but a doctor? Really?
Right. And then they keep referring to him as this shit-hot doctor who's great.
Well, they say at one point that he's the best doctor in Vanity, which says to me, Vanity has the shittiest doctors in the DC universe.
Because the timeline is all over the place on this.
Yeah.
But if I can follow the timeline correctly, he's only been a doctor for about 12 hours at this point.
Right. And they say that he's 19 or 20 in the comic. They mentioned that, like, and that's a little confusing as well. They say you look 19, but I'm really 20. Okay. Either way, you're not a doctor at that point. I mean, Doogie Howser aside, you can't become a doctor at 19.
Well, and then there's nothing indicating he's had any training to make him a doctor.
Right.
Like, how is he just suddenly a doctor?
This is what I'm saying. Don't just impersonate a doctor and start treating patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they also say he's a surgeon. You don't just fake that.
Yet never having been shown doing surgery.
Right. Exactly. But he's the best. Yes, he is. Yes. That was one of my notes that I had written down. It's like, how old is this guy?
Right. And you know, I mean, he doesn't know how to use a restaurant.
Right. He's supposed to be a doctor and he doesn't know how to order off a menu.
I mean, it's kind of a funny scene, but I'm not sure how intentionally funny it was.
Well, I get the fish out of water thing. He's been raised by like, monks in the Andes.
Right. He goes out on a date with Joy, the sexy blonde nurse, and he gets to the restaurant and he's like, I can't eat everything here.
Right. There's too many courses.
He thinks he's supposed to eat all the food there.
Right. And, you know, and it is kind of funny, but it's never followed through on because he seems to know how everything else in society works.
Right. That's one of my biggest notes is how does he know things and how does he not know other things?
Well, later it's revealed that he has the memories of like a dozen or more other people who have worn this helmet.
Right.
So surely they've all gone to restaurants at some point.
You would think.
You
or
would think.
Have ordered food somewhere.
Or met a girl.
Well, that's one of the other running things in this is like he doesn't know how to, he doesn't understand women.
Right.
And one point is that the Lizard King or something says, do you even know how to remove a bra? And like that was the big insult during their fight.
Yes.
His response was like, I know a girl.
Right. So is he innocent and fish out of water, or is he an experienced doctor who is world-wise and understands? Because he, at one point, he hotwires a phone in order to track a phone call to its source. So right. He understands technology.
Sort of. I didn't understand that sequence either. That's another thing in my notes is like he just followed the line. I was like, I that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
I'm able to forgive, you know, hand waving him. He followed the line. That's fine. I don't care. But be consistent. That's all. If you're going to be ridiculous, be ridiculous. If he's going to be an innocent, naive dummy, then make him that.
Right.
But they try to make him into like he's Peter Parker. But no, wait, he's Batman. No, wait. Then at the end, they try to give him a mansion and money. So, okay, so he's a rich billionaire now.
With some kind of weird mind control going on that makes everybody forget that Kurt Falconer...
Well, that's know, it. Was it mind control? Because someone, one of the doctors, has a scar on his forehead. So was there an operation to remove his memories?
But then everybody else forgot too, but they don't have scars on their...
This is
Lex Luthor's doing by this point. And I still think Lex Luthor is the best part about this comic book. You know, this is machinations by Luthor. But, you know, if Luthor could brainwash all of Vanity, well, how has he not used this in Metropolis with Superman?
Exactly. Interesting Superman cameo, by the way, when he's just
Superman, he killed a guy.
Did he kill a guy?
Well, that's in my notes. So that kid that Superman...
He's supposed to visit a kid in a coma, and the only thing that'll bring him out is the voice of Superman or whatever.
Right, and he scares. So he's got the frosty because this is after he came back from being dead, right?
Yeah, he's about to be electric blue or whatever
right.
it is.
And so you know, there's the scene in the hospital where Superman is meeting this kid, and you know, the kid wakes up and sees him, and his eyes are like. There's mist coming out of his eyes or whatever. And then the kid flatlines, you know, and the end of the scene is his mom going, you know, Kyle or whatever the kid's name is. I'm like, I think that kid just died.
Okay. I had taken it as he just fainted, but,
oh,
but that's a little bit darker. Either way, it's freaking Superman, man. Just have the kid wake up.
Right. We're kind of jumping around here. I think probably.
Well, so does the comic.
So does the comic. I think you're right. Like towards the end, the narrative tightens up a little bit.
Once you get the introduction of Luthor and a backstory has been given to Uno, or at least attempted. Right. And you get his, okay, now I'm going to join the Justice League. And he aces his test, of course, because he's the ultimate man.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that as Miller too. Never take it. Never miss an opportunity to dump on another hero.
I mean, I think ultimately, plot-wise, it's the first half of it is him just fighting various people and establishing himself as the hero of Vanity. Some of this stuff is ridiculous, and he's making some relationships, particularly with Dr. Frostick.
Really? Froststick?
Yeah.
The icy woman? Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
Whose heart he is slowly melting. You know, so they're establishing this and whatever. And then, like you said, a couple of the issues there, the two Joker issues make no sense to me. If you can explain exactly what Joker was doing, but this is also when Joker was in his cosmic Joker phase.
Yeah. So he's having a holiday, you know, he's taking it's explained that
takes a holiday. It's like when death takes a holiday.
Yeah. He likes to go to a place that's even more messed up than Gotham.
Yeah.
Which is funny. You know, that's a good joke. But I get the thing that he's trying to drive people crazy with dancing crickets. And it's a really weird thing to say. I get that.
Right.
But he's trying to turn people crazy with dancing crickets. But then he also wants to be captured and beat up.
Yeah.
You keep saying that's part of my plan. That's
a weird scene. Yeah, but it was all part of it. And then like somehow the dancing crickets translates into he has some toxin
Yeah, in a blimp.
I don't know how that became a toxin that was going to poison the city that Batman and Aztec just randomly drive past a poster of like a boxing match. Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, we figured it out. It's in the blimp. I'm sitting there going, hell?
I looked at that poster over and over again and went, what am I supposed to see? Is this like one of those magic eye photos?
Yeah.
That I just look at it long
enough?
And this is
the part where we get like the weird, the Morrison stuff with the, you know, the cut up, the Burroughs technique and the children. And I think Batman even mumbles a child's book of verses when they're looking at the poster or something like that. And then they're like, oh, it's in the blimp.
Because at one point he said, this is all over your head. And he goes, oh, it's a blimp over my head.
Oh, right.
And I'm like, okay, that's you're not the Riddler.
Right. And how the hell did they end up at this abandoned building that, well, we're getting, there's weird plot stuff in here.
Yeah.
No sense. But they end up at this abandoned building, which just happens to have like a character in the comic who has been infected by Joker. Who gives the clue about over our head. But there was absolutely no reason for them to be outside this building or for them to go into this building. There's nothing.
Well, that's where you get the scene transitions that are just so, like, at one point they're in a restaurant, then they're in a graveyard.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground where they travel to that place, or there's no panel where they teleport or something like that.
And there's no explanation about why they are going from
point A to point B. Yeah.
But, and then there's some weird thing that happens with the blimp that I'll be damned if I can figure out what they did. So Batman shoots something off that he found.
He found some anti-gravity mechanism, which is, you know, that's new.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts it on the blimp, which takes it into orbit. But guess what? That would come into the atmosphere. So technically everyone should be getting this toxin. You know, it's not like he threw it into the sun or something. Again, I'm able to forgive quite a bit, but just techno babble it. You know, learn from Star Trek. They can techno babble a scene like crazy. I'm like, okay, fair enough. That sounds great. But they're doing such a half-assed job on this.
And this just takes us to about the halfway point. So we've established that he's now pals with Green Lantern, and he's pals with Batman.
Well, there's something about Green Lantern that we need to address, and that's the fact that Major Force, or it's actually someone pretending to be Major Force, you know, because Major Force is the OG Fridger,
right?
And Green Lantern's upset that he's already dead and he didn't get to confront him. But then Aztec's girlfriend, or kind of love interest, she's essentially fridged as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow, maybe people weren't aware of this trope at the time, but I think they were, weren't they?
I don't know. I don't have the history behind me as to when, you know, Gail Simone coined the phrase.
Right. But the concept of killing the girlfriend. Killing the girlfriend in order to give the hero motivation. That's been around for a while. Even if Gail Simone hadn't coined it yet.
But if it had become a point of contention at that point, I have to be honest that I don't know. I don't know if it'll become the sort of analyzed thing that it is now.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I feel like Grant Morrison should have known better.
Again,
I'm giving him, you know, credit that maybe...
Yeah, Morrison should have known better, but Miller, he still doesn't know any better. I'm not trying to dump on Mark Miller. He's fine for what he does. He's a shit Stan Lee. That's what he is.
Wow.
a really good self-promoter is what I mean.
He's his own hype man.
Yes, he is.
But just looking through my notes here, like while we're talking about some of this stuff, it's like almost every page of my notes I have in huge caps, you know, none of this makes any sense at various scenes. Yeah, but the Green Lantern thing, and also we should mention... emo is the word of the day for almost all of these issues. I mean, yes. Most of my notes are like, you know, so-and-so talks, they have emo moments.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand this is mid-90s and that's what it was all about. But
Everybody's very upset. I mean, and there's actually not they're not good ideas, but they're not bad ideas. Like, what is her name? Doll Baby.
Death Doll.
Death Doll. Oh, yeah,
that's completely emo.
Yeah, it's completely emo. But the fact that, you know, she was a superhero, was sent on an ops mission, and then they had to modify her, which makes her lose all humanity. That's an interesting idea. Does it go anywhere? No.
Nope. She just gets merged with her ex-boyfriend blood type's gravestone.
Because some guy smacked her in the wrist and broke a... You should have a fail-safe system, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a molecular transport, you know, have a backup. And this is what frustrates me about this, is that there are some good ideas in here, some really neat directions they could have gone. And instead, they went for the easy way out, it seems.
I think that that's just, I'm trying to think how to work through this in a reasonable way. Because the problem is, I could go off on tangents about all of the ridiculous stuff, which I have already.
Yeah, that's been the podcast so far.
It's been the podcast so far. You know, I think that plot-wise, so we have him establishing himself in the city fighting all these D-list villains. We have him teaming up with several superheroes. And we meet the Q people in the Q Foundation, which are the mysterious group behind. They trained him to do this because he's supposed to fight the Shadow God at some point. And I will give a spoiler alert here. The Shadow God never shows up. We never see the Shadow God. Yeah. He does meet up with a guy calling himself the Lizard King.
He can do anything.
Who was partnered with Uno's dad, Aztec's dad, who was the Aztec before Aztec.
The pre-Uno.
The pre-Uno. And so the Lizard King is very emo because he wants Uno's job.
He
so
feels that he can do it better.
And of course, Aztec wins. He beats him, but not before the Lizard King revealing that his father, Uno's father, was killed by the Q Foundation because he fell in love with a woman, which, okay.
I guess they're monks, then they're, I don't know.
Right. Well, they can't undo bra straps, so.
Yeah, so I guess it's all. Yeah. But if you look at the Q Foundation, there's plenty of women in it, apparently, because Uno's potential replacement is a woman.
Right. And she's introduced and given a lot of space for a brief amount and then kind of disappears.
Well, you can see where this...
You can see where some of this is going, and I get it. And this is where we kind of get into the last few issues where...
They really, really think that this is going to be a long, ongoing series. They truly, God bless them, they believe that with all their hearts.
Yeah.
This is going to be a long-running series. And so a lot of things are set up. You have his... You know, cast of characters, recurring characters that are going to be his sort of Scooby gang. And then, you know, they set up his life in a penthouse with Lex Luthor's money. So there's conflict there. He's part of the Justice League. There's something going on there. So it's a decent setup that will never pay off.
That will never pay off. And this is where, like, it almost feels like they're retconning in the last couple issues with Luthor.
Right. Doesn't it feel like Morrison finally became interested and said, oh, wait. Let's get rid of all this other crap and let me set it up for the future.
So it turns out that...
And that's me just speculating, but that's what it seems like to me.
Because Lex Luthor comes onto the scene and apparently he's aligned with the Q Foundation.
Which makes sense. And they were setting up that the Q Foundation was going to, like they went to Thomas Wayne to try to get money. And they went to other rich people to try to get money, which all turned them down. Of course, Luther would give them money.
Right. And so it turns out, like, they're like, oh, and it was Luther that set up all of these D-list villains for Aztec to fight.
Yeah. So his popularity grows.
His popularity would grow. And it was Luther that ends up doing the mind wipes on apparently the entire population of Vanity. And it was Luther who was setting up his team ups with the various superheroes. Also, Luther could get Aztec into the JLA
for some nefarious reason that we don't know about.
Right, that we never paid off. But some of this makes sense But it's clearly, I think, and again, I don't mean to read a response to this too much, but again, it's clearly they're kind of retconning in issues 8 and 9 of a, you know,
yes,
already retconning just the few issues before.
Right. The first 5 issues are essentially thrown out the window. His Uno's characterization, what his motivations are, everything is just kind of pushed aside, or like you said, retconned into something else completely. The whole thing, art and plot, is just bad transitions one after the other.
Yeah.
And yes, my biggest reaction when I was reading this was, did I miss something? Is there something I'm missing? Apparently I am, because this is a highly regarded series.
Yeah. it is and it isn't.
Wow. Yeah.
There are definitely people out there who are like, oh no, no, this is bad. And, but then there are people who are like, this is the way comics should be. And I was like, oh, this is not how comics should be. It's so weird. And even the last issue, just one final, they're still setting things up. They know it's their final issue.
Right.
It's clear it's their final issue. They're wrapping everything up. But then like one of the last panels is setting up a whole bunch of, so Lawrence Rodman.
Yes. I was going to ask you who and what is Lawrence Rodman?
Your guess is as good as mine. He shows up in a couple earlier issues, like in, you know, I mean, in DC and Marvel do this, like right. On longer runs where you introduce something that isn't visited until 10 issues down the line or what have you. So this Lawrence Rodman character gets introduced early in like a one page sort of, you know, he's leaving for work and then he goes crazy when he walks out of his house and smashes a bug.
Which was an interesting setup. And I was like, okay, where's that going?
And then he appears again in like a later issue. And then he appears in the final issue, like in the wrap up portion where they introduce, there's Patty Celeste, the super groupie.
Yes. Who hands out panties.
Yes.
which I guess Aztec has to erase from his mind for some reason.
He didn't seem to mind. So there's that. So, and then there's somebody called Quizzical, and we revisit. Totally not the Riddler. And this is all one page, and it's like, you know, separate panels going down the page. And then we're back to Lawrence Rodman, who may or may not be now Uno's brother.
Yeah. So, this would be fine if it was a ongoing series and they were just setting up for the future. So,
but the characterization of Lawrence Rodman in the last issue is very different from the characterization of him.
Right. He seems like he's sort of robotic in the beginning. Yeah. It's
so,
weird.
But why would you, like, knowing this was their final issue?
But did they? This is why I asked you. I think this was before we started. Do you know the history of this comic? Did they know that it was going to get canceled?
I think because they stopped. Did you read this in a trade or did you read this with in individual issues with?
I read it in the trade. In the trade.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were reading the letter. Letter page.
No, I was not.
Oh, the letter pages are fun on this one. No, I mean, it had been telegraphed several issues ahead of this. Because in the letters pages, people were saying, hey, it looks like previews is saying that this comic is canceled.
Okay.
And then you know, the editor was like, yeah, we've still got a couple issues left, though.
Huh. Okay.
The way they ended it, though, still felt as if it was, you know, they were wrapping it up. They were introducing a whole bunch of stuff, but the ending was, you know, he's off to the JLA.
Right. And he does appear... cameo version, I guess, in Morrison's JLA run. And I do remember reading that years ago and thinking, who is this guy? Because I had not read this is my first time reading The Ultimate Man. I've only known it.
Was this your first experience with The Ultimate Man, Paul?
This is The Ultimate. Yes. It's my first experience with ultimatums. And by the way, I did read where Electro is suing Aztec for copyright infringement. With that helmet.
It's just not aerodynamic.
No, you're supposed to be flying. And what's with the... It's all this high-tech thing, and then there's feathers.
It was the 90s.
It was the 90s. And there are some goofy designs from the 60s and 70s. Comics have goofy designs. All you have to do is look at Nightwing's first outfit. And, you know, I'm sure Aztec is like, mine's totally better than that.
No, I mean, comics have always had. But there's part of me that feels as if this comic is such an, I mean, smack dab in the middle of 1996. I mean, this is smack dab in the middle of all of that horrible excess. You know, I mean, everything is...
It's a mess. It's a mess. It's sloppy, and it's just...
A lot of comics at the time were a mess, too. Visually, they were... You just look at that stuff. I mean, obviously, we had the very famous Liefeld Captain America. And, you know, it's pouches and shoulder pads, and I just... weapons the size of buildings, and you know, and it is what it is at that time. And I think it really feels like this comic is such a product of all of that. It almost feels like Morrison and Millar were almost trying to, like you said, it's there's a part of this the comic that does feel like it's meta, but I think the meta fails. But the one argument for it could be that it really is a representation in so many ways of the comics of the time, whether they were trying to do it as a meta or whether they were just trying to stay relevant to what they felt was the prevailing trends.
So, yeah. So that's where the sloppiness comes in. I think it's just, it's messy. Is it a satire? Is it a parody? Is it serious? Is it trying to capitalize on the current trends? Is it trying to, you know, comment on the current trends? What is its point other than the five on the guy's helmet? And I don't think, and maybe that's the two visions, Miller and Morrison, who have very, very different outlooks on how comics should be made. Yeah. And maybe they didn't work well together, you know, and this is the result. Some people just don't work well together.
Right. And we know that, you know, again, infamously, they are not friends any longer. You know, the idea is that stemmed out of issues from another comic book. Well, I say we know. Neither of us are those two people. We can't.
Yeah, we speculate.
It's, you know, speculated. Well, you know, and what have you. But, you know, it just their approaches are so vastly different. We look at it now as a weird pairing, one that doesn't seem to make any sense. But at the time, it's like I said in my intro, I mean, it must have had execs just losing their shit.
Yes, absolutely. And if you, I mean, they do have they both try to deconstruct comics. They both try to deconstruct comics and heroes and so forth, but they do it in vastly different ways.
Right. And I think one of them is of a much superior intellect.
Morrison. Yeah, we don't have to pull punches here. Morrison is a much more intelligent, a vastly better writer. And even when Morrison fails, you still say, that's pretty good.
Right. And there's things in here. It's the things that I think I identified as Morrison's that I was like, I could deal with that. Now, the best part about this is if it turned out that I am dead wrong and that the stuff I'm like, oh, this works, this is pretty cool, could turn out to be Millar's. And I think that would be very funny. I would have to own that. I would 100% own that, because the self-owning humor that I would have to own is pretty fun.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if anyone has that somewhere, you know, a breakdown of who wrote what and what was the editing process like. That would be that would be fascinating. But overall, we have this. I'm glad I read it. I'm glad I experienced this, because it is just a really intensely interesting piece of work from a very strange time in comics. I think it's worth reading.
Oh, yeah. I actually recommend reading it, because it is an experience.
Yes. Yes. And maybe we're just completely wrong and we're missing some, you know, some hidden meaning in there. I don't think so, but
it's entirely possible. But you'd think between the two of us, one of us would have stumbled on it, but
we're old farts.
We are two of multitudes.
That's right, we are ultimate comic book readers. So Do you have any words to sum up, or should we just move on?
Yeah, no. I think I've said my piece. I could go through my notes and pick out all of the other things that drive me crazy, but you know, nobody's listening, so we could just list stuff. So
I think we explained this comic with as much coherence as the comic itself.
Yes. Art imitates life.
Indeed. I do recommend reading it though. It's an interesting piece.
Yeah.
Speaking of an interesting piece, would you like to know what we're going to do next week?
I would, Paul. Or I believe you have the next recommendation.
The next recommendation is from me. Yes. Yes, I would like to tell you about it. I'm sorry. I keep talking over you today. I apologize.
What are you, my wife?
I hope not.
That joke's really, the joke only works if she were in the room. That's, yeah. You know, if you could throw something at me.
So anyway, next week on next time on an all new edition of the Collected Edition, we are going to read The Sensational She-Hulk, Volume 1 by John Byrne, written and drawn by John Byrne. So this is, it's the blatant Deadpool ripoff years before Deadpool was even created.
Does it just feature John Byrne yelling at everybody?
This is when, well, sometimes. We can have that discussion next time. We could have the legacy of John Byrne.
And I'm surprised, actually, we haven't done John Byrne yet.
Yeah, we really haven't.
No.
I really like his Fantastic Four run. There's a lot to like about John Byrne. And yeah. There's a lot of issues. He's got a lot of issues. He's got subscriptions, let's say. This is one of those classic comics that will be fun to analyze.
Yeah.
So it's a Sensational She-Hulk.
And it'd be even cooler if there was something in the media that we could link to that would... never mind.
Yeah. Well, it's actually... I really wasn't... This particular year, I usually try to link up with what's going on in the media world. And I wasn't doing that this time around because I just wanted to do fun, different things. But the series, She-Hulk Attorney at Law, is going on. And I thought, I need to revisit some She-Hulk comics.
Kind of wanted to twerk things a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So because of the series, I personally just wanted to revisit some of the, you know, the more interesting runs of She-Hulk, like Dan Slott and John Byrne. So why not force you to do it as well?
Yay.
Yay. I have a feeling we're probably going to be doing some Daredevil at some point as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, we already did one Daredevil and that,
Oh, you hate me for that. You've never let me forgive. You've never forgiven me. But I do like Daredevil. Just didn't like that one. Anywho, none of that matters. We're going to read She-Hulk. And
Yay! I think that'll be fun.
We're going to break the fourth wall. That's it. Next time, She-Hulk. Read it. It's fun. And I guess that's it. So follow us on all the Twitters and the things and the blah, 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 blah. You know the drill.
We know the drill.
Yeah. Until next time, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the show are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. The show can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as online at collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes. You can also send us feedback at comments@collectededitionpodcast.com or on Twitter at @CollectedEdPod. That's Collected, EDPOD. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.
Are you not entertained?